We continue our Taking Care of You in 22 series today with a Back to Basics cooking segment. For those of you who want to save a little money this year by cooking at home or have more control over what you feed yourself and your family. Yes, we do talk about cooking a lot on the show and with some of the greatest cooks and chefs around, like Yoram Ottolenghi and Ina Garten, who make the hard stuff look easy. But we know some folks need to get a handle on the ABCs of cooking and may only have three or four go-to dishes they can make. And if one of them is grilled cheese, this segment is for you. So today we're discussing the basics and how to use those basics to up your game. So maybe you're not looking to land a spot as a contestant on Chopped or MasterChef, but could use a few ideas for a nice meal at home. Our next guest is a cooking writer at the food desk at the New York Times. He also has a cookbook coming out in March. Eric Kim is a staff writer, and the name of his new cookbook will be Korean American Food That Tastes Like Home. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. So glad to be here.
Listeners, are you trying to improve your cooking skills? How much time do you spend in the kitchen? What dish are you hoping to work on? Is there a basic skill you need a little bit of advice on? Or maybe you're already an amateur chef. What's your go-to dish? What new cuisines have you tried making recently? We love hearing success stories as well. 212-433-9692. 212-433-WNYC. Our social media is at @allofitWNYC. That's Twitter and Instagram. All right, I want to start with some basics, and I think the first basic, Eric, is probably shopping. If you are somebody this year who decides, yes, I'm cooking a lot more at home this year, what kind of ingredients should you keep in the kitchen? What should you stock up on now?
Oh, man, I have this regular list of staples that I always just refresh every time I go to the grocery store. Definitely eggs. I eat maybe a carton or two a week. I just love eggs. I think chicken is always nice to have. It's kind of just an option. I freeze it if I'm not going to eat it right away. I like cottage cheese. This is weird, but I buy cottage cheese so I can make pancakes. I think cottage cheese pancakes are the best pancakes out there. So that's something that I always have in my fridge. Yeah.
What about seasonings? What about my spice drawer?
Oh yeah. One thing I always try to tell people is to buy a kosher salt, just a regular good kosher salt. Diamond Crystal and Morton are kind of the two major brands. But if you have that, then you can make a lot of different recipes online. It's kind of the go-to salt that's used to develop recipes in our industry. But it's also just a great seasoning salt, just a nice all-purpose salt. And in terms of other flavors, I always try to tell people to use whatever they like. I think your spice cabinet should reflect your personality and not that of, you know, a celebrity chef or a cook on TV or something like that. So what that requires is, you know, a little bit of experimentation, I guess. But in my spice drawer, I love Herbes de Provence. It's kind of like this, I don't know if people out there still use that, but I really love the combination of lavender and thyme and all those wonderful herbs. And red pepper flakes, those two, when I pair Herbes de Provence and red pepper flakes, it just reminds me of when I started cooking and started like discovering these combinations that I really liked. And you can find them in my recipes now. Yeah.
Okay, Eric, I have to tell you, you've exploded some people's brains with the cottage cheese and pancakes.
Great, awesome.
You put it in the pancake batter, right? That's the way you
use
it.
Yeah. you do. It provides bulk, but it's also like so much protein and moisture, and it makes the pancakes taste like cheesecakes, little cheesecakes, which I think is so great, and eggs and a little flour, but you don't even have to have flour. You could whip up the egg whites and so it's not like supposed to be healthy, but it happens to be nourishing, and that's why I like it.
We're talking to Eric Kim from the New York Times. Yes, the phone lines are getting full. Let's take a call right off the top. Let's go to April. Ooh. Calling in from Queens on line one. Hi, April. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on with Eric from the Times.
Hang up on the house line. That's on speaker.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
It would be great. There.
Yes.
There you are. You're on the radio.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to know that rule about cooking when you make potatoes or boiling potatoes. Why have I always heard you must start potatoes in cold water, never in boiling water? Is there any rule on foods that definitely have to be started in hot or cold?
I think people say that usually because it helps the potato cook more evenly when it comes from cold water. But, you know, you can do whatever you want. I think cooking is all about breaking the rules and like learning for yourself. That's the best way to learn. Sometimes I don't start from cold water. I start from a boiling pot of water. So, you know, it really depends on what you're doing and what you like.
So if you, but there is some science to it. That if you start in the cold water, the potato will come out differently?
Yeah, the potato will cook more evenly because, you know, there's a center that has to get cooked through, and that's the goal. And if you cook it from hot, you might get the outside cooked by the, like, overcooked by the time the center isn't cooked yet. So what that ends up with is like an unevenly cooked potato. But it depends on what you're making, you know? Like when I'm making roasted potatoes, I like to boil my potatoes from hot water and get those outsides kind of like craggy. And then I toss the drained potatoes in oil and they're going to finish fluffing up and cooking in the oven. But because that outside is very like, you know, like cooked and like a little jagged, that gets really crispy. It's like it's a nice British roasting trick, I would say.
April, good luck with your taters. Here's a question that says, I can't ever time things right. And some foods wind up getting cold while other stuff cooks. How should I think about managing the clock in the kitchen?
Oh, my God. I get that question so much. What I always try to just encourage people is to pick recipes that can be eaten, you know, at room temperature. I think some flavors are really wonderful at room temperature. And the reason I say that is because I'm a very disorganized cook and pretty messy cook. So, I mean, you can use your oven if you want to keep things warm at like a low temperature, maybe 250 or something. But I really just believe in eat the food when it's ready, because I don't have that organization personally.
Let's go to let's go to Allison calling in from the Upper East Side, who wants to actually share a recipe. Hi, Allison. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Allison.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I shared with the screener that I'm currently suffering. As I said, I have been crowned, which is a facetious way of saying crowned. I had my coronation, so I'm actually inside since Friday. But before I found out I was negative, I made a big old vat of, God love us, good old Jewish matzo ball chicken soup. And I just want to share that because it's so easy. And I just want to tell everybody how easy it is. Get your pot out, your five ingredients, and get it going.
What are the five?
I mean, do you want to hear it or not?
Yeah, what are the five ingredients?
I want to hear the five ingredients, yeah.
All right, so, you know, like any good Jewish woman, I exaggerated. So they might be six or seven, but here you go. And by the way, I'm a 58-year-old woman, you know, raised by my mother, who was an excellent cook. So I'm thankful for that. That's probably one of the only things I'm thankful for. But in any case, about my mother. But so a chicken, right? I bought a whole chicken. I cut it up. Don't be worried about cutting it up. It takes 2 seconds, but you can buy parts. Get the wings because they get the most grease and yumminess, and you need that for a good chicken soup. Then what I did was I saute my chicken and my onions first, which, of course, my mother does, and she's old school, but it gives it more flavor. Absolutely salt and pepper liberally, liberally, liberally. Forget about your blood pressure. Then what you do is you make sure you cut up while you're browning everything. You cut up and peel your carrots, your turnips, parsnips, celery, and I have added celery root, which is delicious. Yum. And while you're doing all that, you also can grate your celery root, put a little dressing on it, put that away for another meal. Then you put all of that, again, salt and pepper. I put in a little turmeric or turmeric because I'm old and apparently it's good for your joints. And then you slop water all, right? You put the water on, cover it. You got a nice big pot, your biggest pot that you got. And that's it.
And you're good to go. And you are good to go. Allison, I appreciate you calling in. You are a whole vibe, and I'm here for it today.
I love that.
My guest is
I love the parsnip idea.
Good idea, right? Our listeners
have
good ideas.
Really, it adds so much flavor. When I worked at Food Network, a colleague of mine made a vegetarian broth, and I was like, what is this flavor? It's so wonderful. And it was parsnips. Parsnips add so much. It's like, don't sleep on parsnips in your stock.
There you go. That is the sentence of the day. Don't sleep on parsnips. My guest is Eric Kim from the New York Times. We are talking about going back to basics for those of you who have made the resolution to cook more at home. Are you trying to improve your kitchen skills? If you have a question for Eric about one of the basics, we'd love to have you on 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Maybe you have a go-to dish that you'd like to let people know about because it's really easy and good and fun to make. 212-433-9692. 1692. Our social media is at All of It WNYC. Let's talk about veggies for a minute. I know there are different ways to chop different vegetables. I took a knife skills class once and it changed my world in terms of cooking. Like cutting an onion is very different from cutting a tomato and cutting a carrot. So let's start with onions. If you don't want to have that horrible crying scene, if you're an ugly crier, what is a good way to cut an onion?
Oh my God. I think I wear contacts. So if you have contact lenses, that's great. But otherwise, I think one thing is to make sure you use a really sharp knife. It's the agitation against like a blunt knife that causes the onion juices to go into your face. But with that said, one thing to really make it easier on yourself is whenever something says to dice an onion, I sometimes just slice it thinly because I'm lazy, but also I just think if you can save yourself, you know, the extra work, mm-hmm. I sometimes stick to slicing usually. I rarely call for dicing in my recipes. Yeah.
What about tomatoes, softer vegetables? Is there a particular knife I should use? Is there a technique?
You know, with tomatoes, I think if you have a serrated knife, that's a really nice way to slice a tomato because it has that very like kind of like smooth flesh that's hard to get through with a blunt knife. I think the real rule of thumb here, though, is to get a good chef's knife. Like mm-hmm. that's the first thing I did when I was starting my kitchen. I got one knife and I had it for 10 years. I loved it so much that I replaced it with the same exact knife. And you just need a good sharp knife. One is all you need, really.
And I know tomatoes are fruit. Don't at me, people on social media. Let's go to Steve calling in from Montclair on line one. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hey, Steve.
Hey there. How's it going?
Good, good.
Thanks so much for taking my call. I just had one question on how I should really try to maximize the use of a Dutch oven. I feel like I have a couple recipes that just tend to be stews, but I really want to know, you know, maybe how I could better use it.
Oh, man, I love my Dutch oven. His name is Alfred. It's yellow. I bought it with my very first paycheck, and I still have it. It's like the best pot I have. And, you know, other than stocks and, you know, stews, I use it for making bread sometimes because, you know, Dutch oven's really nice for bread. And I use it for everything. I use it, you know, when I need to saute a large amount of something and maybe I don't want to use a low-sided pan. And so if I want like the insurance of those high walls, you know, mm-hmm. because it's such a large surface area, I still do get the browning I want. And it's kind of I think the Dutch oven is just one of the most important tools to have in the kitchen. I really believe that. Short ribs. I love braising short ribs in a Dutch oven. That's my main use, I would say.
Braising short ribs. And I, you know, Trisha Yearwood was on and she has a cookbook and there's the best advice. Ooh. You make your bacon in a high-sided pan and you save the cleanup.
Oh, like, whoa, that's great. Yeah.
And it works. I did it a lot over the holidays.
Yeah. Smart. Go
ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, or the oven. I love the sheet pan method. It's just super easy. Baking the bacon, you know?
Let's talk to Allison. There's a lot of Allisons today. Line four from South Orange, New Jersey. Hi, Allison. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hi. I'm wondering what vinegar does to recipes and to food. I've had a few recipes where I add white vinegar towards the end, and I normally never cook with vinegar. So I'm just curious, like, what its properties does and what it does to the recipe.
Oh, man. Vinegar is so important. When I'm developing recipes, I can't tell you how many times the recipe doesn't feel finished until I add a splash of rice vinegar at the end. That's kind of my go-to vinegar. I like it because it's sweet and like mild. And what it adds is the sour tart note, the high note. I call it like the piccolo in an orchestra. You really need that high note when your food is like, you know, has the caramel notes and the salty notes. It's like kind of like you're creating this balance, which is what Samin Nosrat's book, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat is about. So vinegar is the acid, and I love vinegar. I'm developing a pasta right now that has a little vinegar in it because it has a lot of deep notes, but the vinegar brings it to it, like balances it, you know? Yeah.
My guest is Eric Kim from the New York Times. We are talking about some back to basics as we all think about New Year's resolutions of cooking more. So, Eric, you wrote in the Times that, this is your quote, making a giant green salad for yourself and your loved ones can be the best ways to create a formal break between work and dinner. Okay, so a lot of people with salad, they just salads, you just throw some things in there and poor salad gets overlooked. How do you make a good, crunchy green salad that is enticing, and what vinaigrette that is easy to make would you pair?
Yeah, it's so funny when people read back things I've written, I feel like I black out after I write and I don't even remember writing that. But it is a great way to, you know, break up the day, because a green salad, like, you know, the kind you have at a restaurant, like a really good restaurant green salad, is so easy to do at home. My one trick is after you wash and spin dry or like really dry the greens very well, I like to chill it in the refrigerator with like the towel over it, because the chilled romaine, especially like watery lettuces like that, they just get, or a little jam, they get so crunchy. And I think some people like room temperature greens, but I like chilled greens because it just reminds me of like a restaurant dish, and it's so wonderful. Yeah.
Let's say you want to add a protein. Oh, vinaigrette. Easy vinaigrette.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. My go-to vinaigrette is, it's kind of like a formula, really. One allium, usually a garlic clove that's grated in, or shallot. Your vinegar of choice, everyone should use the vinegar that they like and that they have. Mine's often rice vinegar. I like sherry vinegar. And then just like so many herbs. I think herbs, if you use a variety, it adds so much to it. And what I like to do is chop fresh dill into my vinaigrette, and that gives it a nice like kind of like high note. And I do like fresh parsley leaves and even some stems, arugula. I like to mix it up so there's a variety of textures and flavors. And my little trick is a splash of fish sauce, Worcestershire sauce, or soy sauce, one of those three, for a little bit of like savoriness. It's almost like the salad tastes like meat after that, which is really kind of nice as someone who likes meat.
Well, if you, let's say you did want to add a protein, I'm going to do the most basic thing ever, boiling eggs. How do you know when you've gotten the texture you want? Let's say they're soft, medium, and hard.
Oh, my God. Boiled eggs. I have the trick for you. Do I have the trick for you? It's you boil it for 6 minutes, 6 to 7 minutes exactly. That's what I like for like a jammy, like runny egg. But how to peel that is really the question, right? And the way to do it, I've found, is to shock the white flesh from the shell. And the way to do that is right when the egg is out of the boiling water, you tap it against the counter to create like, you know, that break, and then you dump it in cold water right away. I just like do this all in the sink, really. You know, I don't do an ice bath, I don't do any of that. But when I do that, the white flesh like shocks, and then it kind of comes away from the shell, and then it's so much easier to peel. So think of shocking your soft boiled egg. If you want a harder boil, just do 7-8 minutes, you know. But I love a nice runny egg over greens for sure.
You have a recipe for microwave steamed eggs?
Yeah. This is a really wonderful recipe. It's kind of a classic dish in Chinese, Japanese, and Korean cuisines. But, you know, you just whisk some eggs with broth, whatever kind of broth you want. I recommend a kombu dashi, but like you could also do chicken broth and even just water. And then the trick is to microwave it on 50% power, which ends up happening is your texture is going to be like really silken, almost like silken tofu. And so it's this wonderful protein-rich base that you then kind of bejewel with like chives, and I like to do soy sauce, and I do a little maple syrup too, because I like the texture and flavor of that balance between soy and sweet. It's really, really wonderful.
All right, let's see. From Twitter, Susie says, can you ask what type of fry pan or wok I should buy that can do a quick hot stir fry as well as making sauces that need a more open space? My smoke alarm is very sensitive in my apartment, so I can't have hot wok oil burning. Thanks.
Okay, I say this to everyone. The one pan that you really, really, really need to get is, and that was when I disconnected. No, you needed a stainless steel pan. Like, I think like a 10-inch or a 12-inch if you want, depending on who you're cooking for. But that's the very first thing I bought, you know, when I was starting out cooking. I bought like a stainless steel pan, and I still have it. It's the thing that I use all the time. I just bought it for my brother who got married and moved into a house. So I was like, you need this one pan. So a stainless steel pan, like a good one. And, you know, the trick is to heat it up before you put anything in it, even the oil. And that's how it stays nonstick. There's your trick. Yeah.
There you go. Someone would like to know. Oh, there's so many good ones. Here's a tip. Our oven has been broken and we started making stovetop pizza on our cast iron griddle. It's so tasty. Thank you.
Whoa, cool.
Interesting tip, right? Let's see. Who else should we... looking at? Well, you know, while I figure out who else to go to next, I want to ask you about two things that I teased. One, how to sear salmon. Because it can go wrong. It can go very wrong. You have a great recipe here. Go to garo salmon with crispy rice. So tell me about searing salmon.
Yeah, I love that recipe because it really, the purpose of it really is to teach people two things. How to sear your salmon, which is you want to get the pan really, really hot first, and then you add the oil. And when the oil is like shimmering, and even if there's like a little smoke coming out of it, that's when you add the salmon skin side down. If you can get skin side, you know, skin salmon, it's like really lovely. You get that like restaurant crispiness, and you just let it go on that side for a very long time. Or not a very long time, like almost the entirety of the salmon cooking. So I let it go for a good, I don't know, 7-8 minutes, and then you flip it and just barely sear the other side. That's how you get like a nice medium rare. But it's that skin side, when you just crisp it up like that, it's wonderful. And then with the salmon fat that's in the pan, I like to make a pan sauce by like blooming some gochugaru, which is a Korean red pepper powder. A few other ingredients go in, and then butter gets added at the end. It becomes this wonderful sauce. So this all happens in a stainless steel pan. That's what I, you know, what I said before. It's really wonderful.
Mary, calling in from New Jersey, wants to circle back to something you said at the top of the segment. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How you doing?
Great. What's your question?
I was wondering, you had mentioned using herbs of Provence and chili pepper flakes. How do you do that? I have that as a staple in my pantry, but I never thought to use chili flakes with it.
Yeah, one thing that's really important with those dried kinds of spices is to bloom them in fat. So, you know, let's say you're starting a soup while you're like cooking the vegetables, add your herbs and your pepper flakes then, and they'll kind of like almost hydrate in that oil and really perfume, and you'll smell it, and then you'll be like, oh my God, I'm activating it right now. And then you add your liquid and whatever else you're doing with the dish. But, you know, add it in the step that has some like high heat and oil, and then that's how you bloom those ingredients. It's really nice that way. Yeah, hope that's helpful.
Someone would like to know about, they got an air fryer over the holidays, a simple air fryer recipe. That came from Twitter.
Ooh.
What do you think? Do you have any?
I don't have an air fryer, but I watch people make wings in it all the time. My parents use it to reheat French fries from takeout, and I think the air fryer is really magical. I just haven't really experimented much with it. But my friend Ben Mims, he's a columnist at the LA Times. He makes a brownie in the air fryer, which I think is pretty incredible.
Okay, yeah, so if we Google him, will we find that recipe?
Yeah, you will. I think so. Yeah.
Okay, Ben Kim, LA Times. Brownies, go for it.
Yeah, Ben Mims.
Ben Mims. So Eric, before I let you go, we talked about roasting chicken as a possibility. You're a big fan of sheet dishes. You have a roasted chicken with caramelized cabbage. I'm going to say that one because some people listening might have some skills already and they just want to take it up a notch. Tell us a little bit about this recipe. This is for folks who already know what they're doing a little bit.
Oh yeah. Sure. I love that one. I've done two different versions, like a dry brine, which is what the recipe says. It's brown sugar, salt, and a lot of black pepper, and you just let it, you kind of massage that all over the bird, let it kind of sit in the fridge overnight, and it's going to be a really juicy, delicious, flavorful bird when it's roasted. I also have a little fennel seed in there. I like that because it has that like anisey flavor, and you have it with the cabbage as well. When the cabbage cooks on the sheet pan, which I think is the best way to roast the chicken, I think it's the only way that it ever actually gets really crispy on like all sides. But as you do that, because the surface area is so wide, the cabbage gets like so caramelized, almost charred. And with the fennel seeds, it almost tastes like roasted fennel, which I think is really nice. It's like a nice trick. I mean, I love cabbage, but I love fennel, but like cabbage is much cheaper, so I like using it.
Got a couple of tips we'll share. Lance says, I tried a trick to make the best hard-boiled eggs every time. You bring your eggs to a boil with 3 inches of water, turn off the heat, put the pot on, let sit for 12 minutes. Perfect every time. Thank you, Lance. A suggestion for some vinegar. La Para. Someone said they buy it every time. I believe she said she was in France. She buys it. So there you go. Final thoughts. Any one last thing you'd love to leave for people who are thinking, I'm going to try cooking this year. I'm going to do it.
Oh yeah, I'm kind of on this crusade to make doenjang, you know, more like regular in people's pantries. Everyone knows gochujang, which is that Korean red pepper, you know, paste, but doenjang is also a very important ingredient in Korean cooking. It's a soybean paste. People call it like miso's, you know, cousin, but I think it's its own special thing. I have a recipe on NYT Cooking called Beans and Greens Stew with Doenjang that really kind of activates its magical umami, funky, savory powers. It's a really powerful ingredient. I use it for everything.
Eric Kim is a food writer with the New York Times. He's a forthcoming cookbook called Korean American Food That Tastes Like Home. I hope you'll come back when your cookbook's on out.
I will. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It was so fun.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks to all the callers for calling in as well.